It's on.
Call to order regular meeting, North Bend Planning Commission, Thursday, October 8th, City Hall. Minutes, October 25th, 2012, Planning Commission meeting and public hearing. A motion to approve.
I have a question on the minutes.
Okay.
You're going to motion to approve it.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, hold on a second.
Okay.
Motion.
Sorry.
Okay.
My first second.
That's okay. My bad. Yes, sir.
I'm like, wait a minute, we're going to pass over my...
Yeah.
This is like one of my many bones to pick. It has to do with the air raid siren, which I don't think anybody's going to be flying low, dropping bombs. However, if you are a very, let's say, 25-ish and younger, if you're not listening to the radio in your car, making a speech, don't get somewhere. We'll get there. I'm trying to make sure I drive it home first, because it just keeps getting forgotten. I'm talking about the siren that doesn't exist anymore.
But this is about, are the minutes correct?
In my notes, line 17 of the draft minutes is my comment at our last meeting that relates to the siren, which is no longer in place. I believe is no longer in place. I haven't been told otherwise.
What page are you on?
Last page of the minutes, 3 of 3.
Okay.
Line 17.
Starts on 16. But I don't know if this is the forum for it. I just want to keep bringing it up because I can envision a situation where a 25-something stereotypical doesn't have his car radio on. In fact, he may be driving, listening to his iTunes in the car on his way to someplace. Or walking down the street to the grocery store, or whatever he's doing in our great city. And then the other end of the spectrum, the elder folks probably don't walk the street to see the flashing beacon that says tune in to 1600 AM for whatever the emergency report is. So there's probably a large segment of the population that for a very basic reason might not know that they should pay attention to something that the city thinks is important. Anything from flood to any other natural disaster to, you know, who knows what else. I just think that's an item that's super simple, low technology, that we are allowing not to be used for a reason I don't understand. So the amendment to the notes of the minutes, I think, would be to clarify that it should read slightly differently, and I'm trying not to make this complicated as I already have. I'm not saying that people don't watch TV. And I'm not sure that's going to cover it anyway, or aren't tuned in to North Bend. It was more the North Bend's emergency service.
So you feel that the sentence is captured.
It's a little off.
Incorrect.
Yeah, it's a little off, and I may have said these words. I'm not questioning that. I'm looking at it saying that's not really what I intended.
Would it make more sense if it was Commissioner Lucky said that people may not become aware of an emergency through TV or be tuned into North Bend radio, or, you know, because it's more of the made aware of words that I think is lacking from that sentence.
Yeah, and it's not just the minutes. I wanted to take one more opportunity to make a speech.
I have a suggestion for you.
What's that?
Right now, the siren that we do and have used in the past is being discussed as to the high school wants it to I guess, use on their football games for a touchdown. So what I would, which might be, I don't know what the right use of it, but
recycle.
What I would suggest, since this is kind of the forum that can't make the decision on what we're going to do with that siren, is I can give you Alondi's phone number, and I think that would be a helpful discussion for you to have with her about what your thoughts are on that siren.
Okay.
And one to definitely take to council.
Yeah, well, and she could help you.
Yeah, I brought this up a year and a half ago.
And we did talk about it.
Yeah, it was kind of, it was somewhere over next to David's cookhouse, and we took it down, we don't know why, and that's the end of it. So,
we did talk about, like, the importance of it and, oh, gosh, with, like, the flood stuff that happens around here.
Yeah, it's just that we have no...
Yeah.
This commission does not have the ability to make a decision on that.
No, but it's... it was part of a conversation, so it should, because we talked about it at some length, it should go somewhere else other than just the conversation of Mr. Earn. But wasn't there also, like, isn't, what does Snoqualmie do today? Don't they have some, or do they have some dial back?
They also share the radio station. Oh, reverse 911. That's an optional thing that people can subscribe to.
Yeah. Because we, it was all in the light of,
so let me
think it was when we did our flood conversation, maybe.
Siren box, $200. Reverse directory, $2,000.
Yep.
Something like that. Or maybe it's $20,000.
Anyways, yes.
Reverse.
I agree that it should be.
So I will follow up with Londi.
That'd be awesome.
And,
yeah. I can give her
an opportunity to go to the council meeting. I'll bring it up there as well.
Okay.
But thank you for listening and tuning in to this thing.
Thank you. So so there was some proposed rewording of the sentence starting.
I think the clarification really is not tuned. The words tuned into North Bend, I think I would have inserted whatever we were referencing as our emergency radio station.
How about just saying North Bend's emergency of communication? Could be internet, could be thing out there, could be a TV.
I think it comes down to what do you feel you said, right? This is to be a reflection of what was said at the meeting, not what
I was referencing the radio.
Change it to be.
Is it 1600 even? Is that?
No.
It's
1650, I think it is.
Okay. So that, and that's also the PASS information source, right?
That's 1610.
Why don't we just say the emergency service radio station?
There we go.
Okay.
With that correction, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Public comment on non-agenda items. The distinguished Mr. Garrow.
Reason I came by today, because I missed you all, and just wanted to let you know that I'm retiring, in case you hadn't heard, and I'll be here through the end of the year. I am still working on the storm drain comp plan update, which I finished. I'll be finishing going through the comments by next Wednesday, and I'll be turning them over to the consultant. They'll have to do modifications to it and then bring it to you for review. So the review will probably start in January or something like that, when I'm not here. But in the meantime, Frank Page is the new Public Works Director. He'll be handling everything after me, unless, of course, he gets overwhelmed and decides to do something else. Yet to be determined. So I just wanted to, we wanted to introduce you to Frank, you know, face to face instead of seeing him on a picture, on a paper, or something like that. And that's about it.
We'll miss you, even though you've just only missed us. And welcome.
Yes, we will. Welcome, Frank. Nice of Ron to leave you with a nice open issue so you can dig your teeth in.
Which one would that be?
Which one isn't covered above?
Yeah. Mm. There's plenty of other duties as assigned that show up on the desk when you take a walk out the back door.
The big one, though, was transportation.
Yeah, we got that through, so that was good.
That was a big, long one.
Yeah. Great.
So that's all I had.
Thanks, Ron. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Yep. I'll miss the place.
Enjoy.
We'll find reason to bring you back. Time to time.
I know we will.
He's just saying he's lucky.
Yeah. I'm going to bury that cell
phone. I'll be around.
I'm
not going anywhere.
That's great.
And I do need to talk.
You've earned your time, so you should go enjoy your time.
Okay. And I need to talk to you, too.
Uh-oh.
So, after the meeting,
okay?
Can, not after this meeting, or just give me a call on Tuesday, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
That's on the record, so if you don't call, we're going to have to.
You say okay.
Next meeting.
It's Tuesday.
get sticky notes out.
Frank, did you have anything? Or?
I'm just trying to get my feet wet, see which way to head. And what
pull your boots up higher.
Oh, I thought it was the opposite way. I thought you were trying to come up from below and trying to get some breath, some air.
Well, I did a pretty good job of getting plenty of air. I just didn't want to get there. So, no, it's been an interesting 3 weeks, and I got my hands full. I've got a lot of big shoes to fill, but I'm looking forward to it, and I think it'll be a good fit for everybody once I get an understanding of where everything is and what needs to be done and how business is taken care of. We're working on it.
Yeah.
For Frank's benefit, why don't we just introduce him? Yep.
Jim, Lucky. Been here, I don't know, 10 years or so.
In the community.
In the community.
Okay.
In this chair. Welcome.
I'll show you where he lives.
Yeah.
Next week.
Good thing to know,
yeah. That's where that one lives.
There it is.
If I can help, don't hesitate.
And I'm Rob McFarland, currently the chair of the Planning Commission, and I'm outside the city limits. I'm one of the, I don't know how we
you're
would
special.
Call that. I'm special.
Yeah.
So that Ron doesn't know where I live.
So he thinks.
Yeah.
Well, luckily he can't.
Although I'm surrounded. Well, I am surrounded.
I'm Gary Fancher. I've lived in the city about 9 years. Well, actually, not in the city. I live outside the city limits. And I've been on the Planning Commission almost a year.
I'm Scott Lee. I also live. Is it three?
Yeah,
so
that's it.
Yeah.
I've been in for
this is King County Planning Commission.
And I'm Piper Muyo, and I live in the city, New. So we moved to the North Bend area about 7 years ago, and then 2 years ago we got annexed, or has it been three? Might be three.
2009, right?
Nine, yeah.
Is it nine?
Yeah, and then I joined Planning Commission.
Nine.
Yeah, so it's been almost 2 years since I've been on Planning Commission, and it's great. Great fun.
Working with you all.
Yeah.
See you in January, if not sooner, unless Mike makes us come back sooner. All right. Super.
I'll be curious to see what the notes look like, or minutes of the meeting look like.
Well, a particular call about you will call. Well, Planning Commission review and recommendation on dockets to be taken up for 2013.
Yeah, this is exciting stuff. This is like what I imagined when I joined the Planning Commission 2.5 years ago, apparently. But this is the kind of stuff that we would do, too, and this is the first time.
And it's the first time we've ever done it.
It's the first time. This is so fun.
It's not true.
Well, we've been like, so focused on, because since I started, it was, building moratorium was lifted, water moratorium was lifted, all this storm water and... So, like, this is kind of exciting.
You started right up in the hotel stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
So,
well, we're listening to some interesting tapes right before.
Yeah,
I've blanked a lot of the past out.
Yeah, so this is according to our process. We have our annual docketing process. We didn't actually get any dockets last year, so we didn't run through this. But the process is open to anyone to make a request. They don't have to be a resident. They can be a business owner. They can just have an interest in comp plan amendments. And so October 15th is our annual deadline for receiving dockets. Once that passes, we collect them together, put them into a table, and bring them to the Planning Commission and say, here is everything that's been submitted. And we provide a recommendation from staff's perspective as to whether the docket warrants attention and should be considered in the next year's amendment cycle. And so that's what you have before you. So we can run through these, we can explain them a little bit, mm-hmm. and what we're looking for is a recommendation from the Planning Commission to, yes, take this up, or no, mm-hmm. we don't feel like this is something we should.
Mike, could you kind of back up a little bit and
walk me through some of these, not many of them, but I'm wondering if someone who wanted to make a change for a specific reason, they wouldn't necessarily want to wait a year. Could you talk about what their alternative is?
So the alternative to submitting a docket request, so a docket request is just through the public process. The Planning Commission makes a recommendation, the council considers it, and if the council approves it, it becomes the new law. Alternatively, somebody can submit a request for a zoning or regulation amendment at any time. Not a comp plan amendment, that's just through this process. But something in the municipal code can happen at any time through a developer-initiated amendment. So they have to pay for that. The docketing process is free. If they want to do it at another time, they pay, I think it's $1,500, and that pays for the staff time for review, the processing, notification, et cetera. But that can be submitted at any point.
Okay, and we would know if someone had done that while we're considering these docket issues that they may have submitted previously.
Right. So you remember the Moon Mansion? That was a developer-initiated amendment request.
Okay. Right. So it's not that it doesn't go through the public process. It's just that it's not subject to the October docketing process.
Right.
That's what you're expressing.
Right. And the reason kind of behind the time frame is the comp plan, the Growth Management Act does not allow cities to update the comp plan more than once annually and no less than once every 7 years. So this process is kind of a requirement that we at least open it up to evaluate whether it needs to be amended. And then, like Mike said, the zoning code can be amended at any time. And then we obviously allow this the opportunity for people to submit versus submitting an actual.
And over the last few years, we've pretty much had some comp element or another every year, right? So I don't think we've skipped a year that I can remember.
No, and it's based on the elements. So like our transportation was actually not in compliance because we hadn't updated it since 2004. And so we were working with we were basically kind of having to justify ourselves while we were working through the process, just because the process was taking a lot longer than we had envisioned.
Why are you looking at me?
Oh, not. Not.
Are you feeling guilty?
No, that, no one else in the room, just right here.
I think it's just because you're perfectly across from me.
I got the message.
Okay. Jeez, Gary.
I was new, I didn't know.
No, there was no intention.
So yeah, we've got a mix of, we had three residents that submitted dockets, and the rest of the dockets are dockets that we submitted as staff, saying these are things that we should consider during this process, both comp plan and regulation amendments. So the first one is by resident Peter Nissen, and if you look on the map, this is the one over here in the EP2 zone. He lives in the EP2 zone, and his docket request was to change the zoning all along a certain depth along 140th, the whole stretch of 140th, from either industrial or business to a residential zone, or residential land use designation. And he made that request based on the county's original zoning of that before annexation. A lot of those areas the county had zoned for as residential. Peter Nissen also has, or there's some complicating factors to this docket that we wanted to mention and discuss with you. These properties were all a part of the ULID, the Utility Local Improvement District, by which sewer was brought extended to these areas. And for that ULID, each property was assessed an amount for repayment of the cost to install the sewer. That assessment is based on the highest and best use of the property based on its zoning. So these properties were assessed as either industrial or as commercial, which has a higher value than a residential zone property. So the complicating factor here is if we suddenly rezone these properties to a lower use, they're still having to pay that assessment on the prior assessed value. So it's kind of like
that's because it's grandfathered, or would it then lead to an appeal or a submittal for relief from the previous ULID assessment?
The assessment period is closed, but what we don't want to do is kind of yank the rug out from under people and have them be paying at a higher level of assessment than what they're zoning.
The process to amend, so we assess them based on their zoning, and then, like Mike said, the period's closed. If we rezone, we can't just amend one person or five or what have you. We have to redo the entire assessment for the whole ULID area.
For everybody, and
reassess everybody because they're all tied together because they're shared based on.
Which would mean that some are going to see an increase.
Some are going to see an increase.
You're going to have to make up for a shortfall in these areas.
Right. So we are. There's a number of reasons why this isn't the right timing to rezone property out there. One of which is the ULID just was finalized, and then we have been doing a lot of zoning work with the property owners that at least are in that overlay district area, which then did get assessed based on that overlay. And I guess that would be it at this point. There's a lot of existing uses that.
Right. So just be sure that I got it right. It's the highest and best use of the current zoning, not its theoretical highest and best use.
Right.
Okay.
Wasn't there, even before it all closed, there was a lot of conversation about people who contested their assessments, and doesn't that introduce a whole can of worms just because of that? Because there were a lot of people who contested what their actual assessment was, and so now you'd have to go through and potentially reassess and potentially open the city back up for this whole big contentious conversation with all those folks who were not very happy.
It would start over again. We would start over again. Yeah. On top of this, he is contesting his. So there's a legal part that's a different topic, But he is contesting, and you're right, if we reassess or rezone and somebody
and to address there is this
a,
and then
and yeah. there is a reassessment, it'll start over, and we're basically starting just like we are first time around.
So yeah. I remember the discussion to annex the area, but I don't remember the discussion to rezone any properties. Can you go over what that was, or was there public hearings or not? And when would he have had a chance to dispute what it was zoned when it got annexed?
So there's an annexation process, and in that process, there's notification that goes out to all property owners within the area being annexed, and that's to notify people of what the zoning is going to be upon annexation. So that process did happen. Mm-hmm. So it's not that it was rezoned, it just went from county zoning to city zoning, and this was the adopted city zoning.
Which had been in our plan for forever. Right. Mm-hmm. The overlay district was the only new element we introduced in the area.
Oh, I thought you said that before it became part of it, before it was annexed, that it was zoned differently.
Under the county, it was.
What was it zoned under the county? Was it actual residential?
It was a mix, but some of these areas were residential under the county.
So was his specifically residential? Or?
Yeah. It goes back to the original comp plan land use designation that we set several many years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
There are a lot of property owners up and down that particular area that's being proposed.
Yeah.
Have you received support letters? Is this?
We've only received his docket. There's a very diverse mix of uses in that area. Mm-hmm. There's some residential properties, but there's also a lot of industrial properties with existing industrial uses in that same area.
Yeah. One thing to keep in mind, too, is since the properties were assessed based on their zoning, and we don't have, that I'm aware of, Ron would know, any other people that are protesting their assessment, it leads me to believe that they are aware of their zoning and they're actually at least not protesting paying for sewer of the zoning highest and best use.
So meaning another person who currently is in a residential situation but has sitting on a piece of property right. that is commercially or industrial zoned was assessed as such, they've not come forward. And,
All the protests that are, or the remaining protests that are still up for grabs are not based upon zoning. They're just based upon the methodology that the appraiser went through to figure out how to distribute the assessments. But the zoning has never been an issue in the protests.
So the ULID set up basically fees assessments based on tax parcels, correct? So in one zoning, a tax parcel might be adequate for a single family home. In another zoning, that same tax parcel may no way be the right size for the higher and best use. So I'm trying to get my head around what the real impact is to the dollars that this person's concerned about, his hookup fees.
It's not going to affect his dollars because the assessment has closed. So it's just a matter of moving forward. Is the zoning consistent with what the assessment is? And we're trying to prevent an inconsistency.
But if this gentleman and the assuming the other parties in this block of land are interested in changing their zoning, are we making an assumption that the problem that results from the ULID costs are going to impact him? I mean, I'm missing something. I'm not
sure we're basically saying that we're not recommending rezoning any properties on this in this docket or in this area at this point because we just finished the ULID assessment. It was based on zoning that we considered prior to going through the ULID process. We even amended the overlay zone, which even though they're not part of the overlay zone, we did not extend the overlay zone over them. At that point, we should be, if we thought these were improperly zoned, that should have been the time where we addressed that. So because of all the processes that we've went through to this point, at this point, we're not recommending rezoning of any sort. And instead just allowing some time to, now that we have sewer out there, let some development occur based on the zoning that we've been envisioning for the last, let's say, 7 years, 8 years since this.
I come back to the same thing I kind of overlay everything with, which is individual circumstance. This gentleman who's submitted this docket had a structure, had a home, whatever he had prior to the changes that came upon him. And I'm trying to give some support to his request. I'm not sure why he's requesting it. I understand what you just said, because we've gone through a logistical process already. We're not going to go backwards. I get that idea. But is there a reason that he's specifically, is there something that he's asking for that he's going to accomplish other than the obvious of the rezone? That gives him a different use for his land? Do we know?
Well, would his assessed value go down?
No.
So his assessment rate would not go down?
No, it would not change his assessment.
So in general, he's asking to keep what he had.
Yeah, so the motivation is just to get back.
It would not change. We don't know what he believes his now we're getting more into the he's appealing his assessment.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're actually getting into more of the legal ramifications around that. But basically, they're the comparison would be he's comparing himself to Wood River assessment. Mm-hmm. So I think one Wood River home was assessed at X and his was X higher, but if you look at it just purely as use, existing use, he feels it's the same. And the difference is the underlying zoning.
As well as lot area, too, because he has a very large lot. Mm-hmm. If it was zoned residential, I don't remember how many lots you could, in theory, put on that property, but I think it was like, I think he had like 1.9 acres or something like that. So he could put up to 8 lots on there. Mm-hmm. So residential-wise, he has a lot more potential, but commercial-wise, he's got property, he's got a single-family use on a commercially zoned property. Can he put it to higher, better use? Mm-hmm. You know?
And in the end, you have a, Wood River has a covenant that you can't develop. So I believe they were only assessed at one structure.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
So there's details that, there's a lot to go into what his,
You're not comparing apples to apples.
Not at all. Case.
So then let me ask another question too. So why would the recommendation be to rezone the entire parcel along there as opposed to just his lot and
that was just his recommendation. That was his recommendation as he submitted it.
Was to do everybody along the south side of 140th.
We don't understand the motivation or the why he wants the entire frontage.
I mean, I can see why I would say, hey, if I was residential and...
Right, there's a certain logic to it.
Yeah, I mean, from a zoning standpoint, it actually makes sense in the realm of not spot zoning one piece or four plots.
Can you define EP2?
EP2 is employment park. It's our... We don't really have a true heavy industrial, but it's our heavier industrial zone that allows for more kind of resource-based and larger buildings, more intensive uses.
And then on top of that, since our EP2 is the dark gray area on the zoning map, that's 80% of it we placed the overlay zone on, which restricted... Mm-hmm. EP uses, so for example, there's no warehousing out there. So that the EP uses that are now allowed, at least in that area, and there's a number of restrictions or some allowances, but on top of that, we did consider the fact, and he actually, I talked to him on the phone, he said he was here during our meeting, Planning Commission meetings regarding the overlay zone, because he was aware that we ultimately decided to put that 30-foot buffer around those residential homes.
Well, I was thinking, his name sounded familiar, that was going to be one of my questions, because we did have good participation from several of the residential owners in that area.
Yeah, and so he was aware we had that 30-foot, and that typically, you know, right now we don't buffer like uses. So we are buffering zone property differently than we are anywhere else in the city because we're recognizing these residential structures, whether they remain that way in the next 50 years or...
Well, I think but when we wrote that buffer in there, it was recognition that it wasn't but should it become like, the buffer goes away.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So on this one, I guess the real question is, is staff asking us to decline to docket this, or is it just asking that it be taken into consideration at a time in the year when you've had more time to prepare surrounding information? I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, there's, because this is a comp plan amendment and not just a rezone, this is the time that it would be considered. Otherwise, we'd have to wait another year and do it next year's comp plan cycle. So I think our recommendation at this point is, because of the relationship to the assessment, for all of these properties that we not take this up.
This year. In the meantime, I think...
Well, what changes in 2014?
Well, I think what the question that's arise has definitely triggered the discussion of, number one, if we do rezoning out there, we're going to do a very thorough evaluation of a number of, like we have that neighborhood business zone out there that's questionably got some issues too.
Right.
So we do have, and what we would prefer is to hold off, allow the citizens a little time to absorb this new assessment. And then if we move forward in the future, it may be through an outreach program, you know, like we kind of have different, like the homes in the neighborhood business, I think there's like, you think there's 10 or more in that neighborhood? So 20 maybe. We might specifically engage a little discussion as to how they feel about the zoning, because at this point, he's the only one that's expressed an interest in being rezoned.
So then, just because you mentioned this, so the blue is neighborhood business, does that mean the top part of it would then go to LDR, or?
It could, yeah.
That's what he's proposing.
Just real quick, aren't we setting the agenda for next year? So if we wanted to pick some things off this list to consider, doesn't it go for next year's agenda? You were saying we couldn't take this up, or we shouldn't take this up this year.
By next year, I just mean January.
So quick question then. There's also number four, which the staff has proposed, changing to LDR. So why wouldn't we do those together?
It's a different property. There's a different
circumstances. But it's the same street access, the primary route to it. So why would you look at the area if you're going to touch both sides of the street?
Yeah, the reason why we did think about that is we've been evaluating that and connecting with DOT potentially about different options for it. The long of the short is this is the DOT property. They put it up for auction. It didn't sell. There is an interest that it would be potentially desirable for residential. It isn't, in our view, desirable for industrial. So if we did get industrial piece, we feel like that could be a loss. Because of the nature of how DOT's used it, there's an opportunity that potentially we could facilitate a small residential element in a large park, but giving that area of town a neighborhood park size. So one of the strategies that we have, the first steps would be to rezone it to that residential, which would allow that use to be even allowable, and then start working forward to the next steps, which would be potentially the shared two uses. But that's more of a long-term strategy that we're...
Yeah, so that would be a down zone.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So from DOT's perspective, that would be taking value out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Granted, they didn't get, obviously, what they were looking for in bid, but have they expressed... Are they aware of... discussion to town.
Mm-hmm.
Have they submitted a letter?
Well, we talked to them about the potential of the city, you know, if the city purchased it in some way, shape, and form in a partnership or what have you, as a park, you know, that's a whole nother level of down zone. So the zoning would, you know, so they. But then there's also a interesting, now we're so far into this that, you know, I'm thinking legal questions because I don't have the answer to this, but if we purchased it, do you know, Ron, that we then, say we took 10 of the 14 acres, we then assume the payment, mm-hmm. the sewer assessment for those 10 acres. Mm-hmm. So in theory, they may not get hit as hard as it may look just by the down zone because of the city interest in it.
Yeah.
Now, whether that is something that's, you know, I mean, now we're talking about things that are out of our control because it's a council decision to buy anything, and it would have to financially make a lot of sense to the city because we don't have the dollars just laying around to buy a car. But there are some interesting opportunities that, if the chess was played right, could maybe work out, maybe not. But
so back to this original. Yeah. Sorry. Back to the original. I still come back and compartmentalize the idea that an individual who owns a piece of property is suggesting he wants something done with his property, that, and it goes back to the way it used to be. Mm-hmm. It's a downzone request. Anybody that asks for a downzone, they must have a pretty good reason for it, in my mind. And then the covering all of that is the fact that this docket request includes more than his own mm-hmm. property. Mm-hmm. That throws me off the other direction because we can't discuss people that haven't shown interest mm-hmm. in something. So I'm inclined.
Part of any docket process, though, would be notification to affected property owners. So that's, we're not making a decision without anybody knowing anything. It would just be to say, let's open this up
under consideration.
Yeah.
And I would highly recommend against opening up rezoning closely after going through a very detailed sewer assessment based on zoning.
I think if this docket request was specific to his property, he was asking us to do something, I would be much more inclined to let's drill down on it and let's get him answers. Let's get some answers because he's asked us for something. But because it includes so many other pieces of property that he's not, that we know of, associated with, I'm inclined to table this in some form, as staff suggests, until the next, is it the next year? Is it the next, what's our timeline?
Next year would be the next available.
That's my two cents.
Well, and as we said earlier, if he wanted to come forward regarding his own property, right. he can do that at any time that he would choose to. I think the strongest argument for not taking this up is the one that staff's suggesting in that the ULID impacts are still settling out. The only thing that concerns me about that is that those assessments go way into the future. And so that was the basis of my question earlier, well, so what changes in 2014 or 15 or 16? I don't. So in one sense, I kind of, as much as I kind of want to sign on to what staff's recommending, I'm also hesitant to say, if you're going to do it, if we're going to look at the zoning, let's go, let's figure it out, what's the right thing to do and get it done with, and that might cost Frank his sanity.
It's too late.
But I'm still tussling with that one. The other one is it goes to Gary. I think it was you who brought up the idea. Well, it's not that I don't remember you. It's that I'm not sure who made the comment. But if we're looking, you know, versus looking just at that area. I would want to be looking at all of the zoning out there. I guess this goes to my general comment about most of the docketed areas for rezones is that we not look at things in isolation. That,
yes.
that we make sure that we're starting first from our 50,000 foot level of saying what are our overarching goals? What is the drive? Why are we putting this map puzzle together as we are, and taking that into consideration when we look at this? And part of that, that jumps out at me is the docket 4. I look at, oh well, nice convenient little piece of parcel that happens to be DOT that's looking to get rid of it. You're aware of some development interest in it. You're aware of some property impacts which might make for a nice park. Okay, but what about the piece immediately west?
Yep.
Well, why aren't we looking at that? Why would we leave that last corner between the river and the street industrial? If it's logical that the DOT piece be residential and would now essentially be surrounding residential, mm-hmm. I mean it would. So. Anyway, not looking to get into those questions, but what I would say is that if we do take it up, we should be looking at all of that property out there in the EP1, EP2 neighborhood and industrials. I mean,
so to that comment, this isn't our big update year for the comp plan. Every 8 years, we're required to do a very comprehensive overhaul to look at, are we meeting our growth targets? Are we meeting our employment targets? Do we have sufficient land capacity for the targets that we need to achieve? That happens in 2015. So 2014 is when we're going to need to be working on our major amendments to make sure that we're in place for that deadline.
And Rob, I mean, I share your concern, because we're obviously, as planners, looking at 20 year plus, and that's, so we're not necessarily wanting our hands tied for that if we feel there's better ways to develop out the city. But I do think we need time to evaluate the current assessment and how that is going to affect our professional recommendations when it comes to zoning in the future, because we're still trying to understand that. So I don't think this first year is going to be an understanding year of how should we go about the next 20 or 20, how 25, 30, is it 30 year assessment?
18.
When it comes to zoning. And then, like Mike said, then what we could do is address the whole thing together as one.
So it sounds like, particularly to what you're saying, Mike, is that if we don't want to piecemeal it, so to speak, or I don't know, we can do what we want, but if we don't take up just the dockets, the next required full assessment is 3 years out.
3 years out being the deadline, so 2 years out when we need to do the work for it.
So do it in 2014?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That sounds more palatable.
Yeah.
Which is basically next year when you really think about we're down to 1 month.
Yeah, and that always happens, right? Everything sounds like it's far off, but it's tomorrow. Just a clarification, kind of backstep a little bit. So this particular parcel that this gentleman started off with, we did a ballpark of something around 8 single-family lots out of his acreage ballpark. How does the ULJ set the sewer fees that are going out? Is it 18 years, you said?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, how would that relate that to the commercial zone for me? To me, an office building, a warehouse building, a commercial use building, I'd almost think there would be more use of the sewer with a single-family use of the land than with a commercial use, but maybe I'm wrong. Any light on that?
The commercial property per square foot does not generate as much sewage as a single family residence. However, there are probably uses that are commercial that may use more water in not a domestic application, but some other application. And so we plan for those additional potential higher water uses in that zone that may or may not come up. We don't know.
Right.
But we have to at least provide for it.
So the example, it could be a wash for the ULID cost associated with the change in the zone. Is that reasonable? No pun intended with a wash. But you see where I'm going with that? It's like,
yeah, I don't think we know the answer to that.
Yeah,
we haven't evaluated that.
Essentially, the metrics that you use say that it's higher in commercial than it is in residential.
Has the potential to be higher.
Has a potential, and without a known use commercial, you really can't.
You're guessing.
That's right.
Unless eight homeowners irrigate their lawn for 12 months. So.
Well, but you can come much tighter on the home usage than you can on the broad range of industrial.
Okay,
right? That's what there's.
So, to your point, I'm going to say that because this came from a resident who was thinking not just about his own property, but the entire area of how it should be in his request is basically reflect existing residential character. And because I feel that we look to how an area is zoned for a lot of other decisions about what we consider and our impacts, I really think it would make sense that if we're going to discuss item number four, that we include number one at the same time, whether it's not in January of the year, but it would be somewhere in the year. I think whatever the zoning decisions are that are before us are important to make before we make other decisions about other areas of the city, because that could ultimately impact traffic and other considerations.
I guess what we're saying is if you want to take up four, we'll do it together. You know, we can do it toward the end of the year, which is getting you toward 14 to begin with. So I'd be with you, Gary. I don't want to piecemeal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it needs to be thought of not just docket one and docket four, but that whole area, decide what it should be, what it needs to be, not just this little piece along the street, because again, that may not be the right thing to do.
I know it's confusing that, you know, the overlay district that we did in a lot of that area was also a stopgap.
Intended to,
right? And,
yeah.
And intended to be able to be revisited.
Yeah. You know, who's to say if the existing property owners don't want to be backed up to industrial, you know, they might want to keep it as it is, right? And keep the whole, both sides of the street, industrial versus part residential, and then on the other side, you know, light industrial or something like that. So
you have to look at it in a bigger light as opposed to just this little slice.
I think there's a barrier with the street, and so I think looking toward the north of the of 140th is, although I mean, I guess it would make sense to do the whole area. I can see how docket four, though I think the land to the west of it should be included in that. But there's a natural barrier with the street, and I think there's more reason to do four now than there would be to leave it alone until the other one is done. But if we, or it makes sense to, like, yeah, I guess look around the area there. But I think there is a buffer there. It seems reasonable that could be considered separately.
Well, lots of input. So, do you want to go through these for decision one by one, or do you want to go through the rest of the list and come back around and then we'll take either consensus or take a vote?
This was the only one where we didn't have a recommendation to specifically take up the docket. So I don't know if you want to consider this one first. Maybe the Planning Commission has different opinions on the others, but...
You mean number one?
Yes.
Well, our recommendation is not to take it up.
Yeah. Right.
So should we just, like, go through one by one, and if we want to come back at the end and revisit once because it's something that's later, we do that too. Well, that way we're checking the boxes as we go, making some progress.
Yeah, let's go through one by one, and then if you want to hold off on one and four and take that up at the end. Because I think we were at, like... 3-1 or 2, I'm not sure.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Versus taking, go any way somebody wants to go, but versus taking an actual vote on the very first docket item, which may or may not complicate docket four as well, I'd kind of like to hear about the others. Make a decision, as you said, one's the only one staff's not recommending. Let's see what else we talk about. Does anyone object to that?
The only comment I'd make is goes back to the basics. This gentleman, this property owner, has said, "Please consider." Mm-hmm. We should say something back.
We will
necessarily. And mm-hmm. if the thing we say back is we decided not to decide, not to discuss, he's then free to submit via the normal process for this mm-hmm. change that he's after, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not saying no to his request. We're just in the format that it's in.
Right.
I'm going to take off.
Brilliant.
Because I don't have anything on the agenda, but I do want to make a comment about docket 7. And I did take a look at the comprehensive plan. There are some old drawings or maps on here from 2004 and 2007. And yeah, I'd say, oops, we really didn't notice that before. So why we rezoned our own property to cottage residential, I don't know. But yes, it looks like the maps are correct. And
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
I personally just don't see, you know, downzoning that property when cottage residential is a better use for it.
So we could resell that, make Public Works Department have a profit.
I'm waiting for the city's development proposal that might help them pay for some of the other things that they want to do.
City just pay excise tax.
I missed.
I guess. No,
yeah.
I don't know if we're exempt or not.
I don't believe you are, because one of the more amazing things to me was finding out that schools paid taxes to the state. So the state gives you money, and then you pay it right back to them. I mean,
yeah, it is.
I don't know if it's unique to Washington or not, but it was certainly unique in my experience from other states.
It just comes back to your city
anyway. It's tax.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Okay, see you all later.
Yep. Thank you, Ron.
Bye, Ron.
Okay. See you next time, sir.
Well, on to two then. I'll come back to one.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is Don Torgerson, and he lives adjacent to Torgerson Park. I don't know the history there, if he actually was the one that donated.
Yeah.
I don't remember how it was all donated,
And Jerry Mayer was part of that.
Yeah, maybe it was his parents. That
Was it him? Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he's got LDR's own property currently, low-density residential, and he would like to upzone that to high-density residential. Ultimately, what he's told us is he's interested to do a retirement community such as Red Oak on his property. And so this, because it's already designated residential in the comp plan, this one isn't a comp plan amendment, but just a zoning amendment. But we feel that it's appropriate. The location is adjacent to the downtown, adjacent to a park. It's along a busy arterial. And just generally, that property makes more sense as high-density residential than low-density. So we concurred with it, and staff would recommend taking this up.
And Mike, you've looked at, in the high density, the assisted living as a lodging.
Yeah. Well, and whatever the zoning change, his intended use might not be subsequent owner's intended use,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
right.
Nice to think about. Could you enlighten me on, we've got two high density residential. One is with restrictions.
That relates to docket 8. That's the other one where we're saying let's change it from high density residential to downtown commercial. And that's relating to that limited commercial overlay district zoning amendment that we did 6 months ago, which was a developer initiated.
I'm referencing our legend.
Oh, okay.
Right. You're saying what are the restrictions on this?
In other words, why would someone want high-density residential versus that same with restrictions?
The one with restrictions is specific to the Miller property, Heartland property, on the south side of the freeway.
Okay.
And I don't know what those restrictions are, but it's...
It was a
rezone. The street width, I think, is for the low impact.
No, it was a rezone for the high-density portion of their development that... it actually, for some reason, was before me, but there was an evaluation and a public process that they felt they wanted high density, so the zoning changed from LDR to high density subject to a density cap of 45 units. And the council felt that was appropriate with the density cap. They didn't want to go beyond 45 units based on their sensitive areas. And so Heartland felt that was fine with them, so there was an agreed density cap. And that's why that became kind of an overlay. Right.
Thank you. It just caught my attention. I'm like, we have two of those. And just I agree what I think somebody said, or maybe two different people said, it makes all the sense in the world that that zoning extend to the next road. I'm not sure I can read it on this map. Does anybody know what road that is that cuts back?
Right, sure. Are you looking at it right here, Duncan, just east of the Docket 2 area?
Runs north-south.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Thrasher. Mm-hmm.
Thrasher, yep.
Are you saying
that it's sort of a no-brainer in my head?
You're saying include the rest of the lots that run along the park on the west side of Thrasher?
No. I'm specifically saying, in speaking in support of Docket 2's request.
So just as it's shown?
Just as it's shown.
Yep.
Okay.
Do I recall some comments around potentially relooking at the cottage zoning here in the orange that's down in this area? Or am I making that up?
The only one that related to cottage was what Ron was speaking to.
Yeah, I'm not talking about somebody that submitted a docket. I'm saying, don't I recall staff making comment about wanting to relook at?
There has been discussion about that, of broadening out the allowed typologies within the cottage zone. So to go to just a density range rather than to say it has to be a cottage. So you could potentially have a cottages or townhomes or row houses that meet that density range. That would be.
But not a zoning change, right? What essentially, density-wise, would be the difference between our cottage and the
high-density residential is considerably higher density. You could do up to 21 units per acre. Mm-hmm. And zoning, or cottage residential is 8 to 10 units per acre.
So do we want to talk about number 2?
I'm good. I'm ready to move on.
I'm good.
Okay.
3 is not on.
Number 3, we've currently got for accessory structures, so like garages, barns, sheds, etc. We have a limitation when you're under an acre in size on what the size and height of that accessory building can be. And the intent of that limitation is to keep a garage or a big outbuilding from dominating a streetscape in a denser neighborhood. You recall about 2 or 3 years ago, we actually had a request in a revision to bring that down, or to create that distinction, mm-hmm. because before there was no size limitation under which it applied. So this would be to bring it down a little bit further. We've had quite a few submittals since that time. I think 5 or 6 where people have submitted for an outbuilding, but we're not able to proceed with it because it was either too large or too tall. And so we feel like 1/2 acre to 3/4 acre may be a more appropriate limitation.
And
as a starting point, you
mean? As a starting point.
Right. Nothing less, nothing smaller than that.
Yeah. Right. So if you're larger than 1/2 acre or 3/4 acre, then you're not limited to the size because you're in a more rural setting.
Right.
I just remember us going round and round. Well, we had a lot of discussion about this.
It seemed to me we did a pretty good job the last time, so I'm really not quite sure why we revisit this. And I mean, an acre is honestly not very large. And so, granted, the property I'm going to cite is not of that size, but I think about on 3rd, there's a pretty industrial looking garage business right in the heart of the it is within neighborhood or downtown zoning, but I mean, it looks so out of place, and part of that being its height related to the single story homes around it, and that's kind of the vision that I see in my head when I think about a 1/2 acre lot having that same impact. I guess if I'm thinking about, and I've got the little farmstead, if I'm thinking about, a barn or an accessory dwelling unit, I'm finding it hard to see why that
height restriction would be that imposing if you've got that small a piece of property.
Right. And at 25, only because I know this because this is what my husband wants to do, 25-foot height limit restriction gives you a lot of room to do a lot of stuff with the building. You could have a lift in it at 25. I think you could have two floors. Like, so, I mean, it's... That's
well, there's two parts to this, though. There's the building footprint limitation and the height limitation. So the building footprint limitation is 50% of the size of the principal dwelling. The height limitation, and this is one that this part of it staff added in. So the first part, the docket requester was just requesting the size. But the height limitation is either 25 feet max or the height of the principal structure. So if you've got a 60s ranch house that's got a very low roof, that's the height. That's the maximum height you can have for your accessory dwelling.
Yep.
And this, we've had two people that have come in, they've been very, very upset about this, but they actually had to revise their proposal and take out their second story of their accessory dwelling.
Oh, I see.
Accessory
the problem is the older home, the older one stories.
The older one stories, right.
So it's kind of an equity issue. If you've, you know, you've got one house next door that's at 1.5 story, 2 stories, they can build a much higher accessory dwelling than the neighbor with a 60s ranch house, and that just doesn't seem fair. They're both maybe the same size lot directly adjacent to one another.
I think you just educated me on something I was overlooking. What you're saying is that within the current rule, the accessory cannot be higher than the primary?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I'm much more sympathetic to that.
So that part of it, we would just get rid of that and just make it a uniform 25-foot height. So then the other consideration is what's that threshold of property size beyond which the maximum footprint size is not 50% of the principal dwelling.
So, personally, I'd be fine for taking this up, but I'd want to make sure that we're looking at the bookends of it. What's the down? What's the low end? What's the high? You know, how does this fit within the overall scheme? That would be very key to any decision I'd want to make about it. But
look at it from a much bigger picture as opposed to this. Well, let's just change it to after the three-quarter acre versus...
Yeah, there's other considerations that we'll want to look at. Is there other additional setbacks from the side, from the front, that you want to consider if you're having these bigger uses?
Yeah.
So in the example you used of the 50s ranch single story, if the step was the single story house gets a second story first, and then are they eligible for the 25 feet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, I think my feeling is I feel like it's worth the discussion, but I don't know if that means that I'm in agreement that I would agree that that's exactly what needs to be done.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of that. Right now, all you're saying is let's consider it.
Let's take it up. Yeah.
Let's consider it. It doesn't mean anything will necessarily change.
Yeah.
And is that consensus?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We got an answer on one?
Two.
Actually, two.
Only two? Oh, the second one.
Yes.
Other thoughts on four outside of what we already expressed? Table that one until we come back around.
I mean, I guess for me personally, I feel like I don't feel like we have to consider it in conjunction with one. I feel like it's something that could be considered only because it is abutted by the other things that the staff's recommending that we do with it. It has a different flavor altogether. It doesn't mean that. Well, I guess the question is if we were to consider it, does that mean that we can only consider that and not the rest that's to the east of it or the west of it? I just don't feel like it absolutely has to be tied to one because I think it's a different circumstance.
I totally get what you're saying there. More to the point is by taking up docket 4, we're not limiting what we look at in zoning to docket 4. That's the question.
No, but we're back to the same problem with the...
Because of annexation, or ULID.
ULID, and in somewhat an existing use versus vacant property.
Because EP1 versus what you... The value of EP1, ULID, to LDR is...
Well, yeah. you're saying there's some existing businesses on this other EP1 property that would be impacted by a changing zone.
That's the mini storage facility.
So the property directly adjacent to North Bend Way is the mini storage, but then behind it they have larger scale boat and RV storage.
Wait. Docket 4. Yeah. But docket 4 is not. Docket 4 is the Department of Transportation.
Right.
There's nothing on it right
no.
now. Yeah.
It's
more of the point that just is how is this change in zoning not complicated by the ULID?
It is.
Cost impact.
It is.
Different. So if that's the number one reason for not going after docket 1, why would we use that as... not use that to say we shouldn't go after 4.
The only difference is if the there's two risks. One that the DOT is trying to sell it, and they're somewhat at a price point now that's kind of getting really attractive. So if it sells to an industrial use, it's industrial. There has been interest from the adjacent developer that would potentially be interested, and if the city could find a logical way to participate and recoup our funds in purchasing for park, there could be an opportunity for a park. The odds of that, I don't, that's so hard to say. Basically, the site DOT has been using for, they've been filling and all kinds of stuff and excavating. And so the concept here is that I'm trying to make sure I'm not going down too far of a...
Well, you think about that a second. Let me make a different statement.
Yeah.
If a higher and best use is industrial, and there's potentially an industrial buyer because of the attractive price point that it's getting to, and that gets developed as an industrial property, that's better revenue and potentially jobs for the city versus more residential. Why would we be taking away an industrial opportunity?
Well, that if looking at it that way, yes, you are taking away that opportunity if you rezone this, for sure. If that's where you feel is it the appropriate location for industrial is.
I mean,
if there is, yeah.
I don't want to rezone it just to preclude or to get ahead of its potential sale. I feel that the buyer, just as we've already discussed, if the buyer turns out to be more of a residential developer, they're going to come in and submit for a rezone.
Will they naturally do that, or will someone look at it and say, that's EP1?
The only problem with that is that sometimes they'll buy subject to a rezone, but when you're looking at subject to a rezone and a comprehensive plan amendment, you're looking at a year plus process.
So maybe too much to...
It's a lot of risk and a lot of time frame to be holding on to potentially. It's not something that, if you guys don't want to take it up, it's the only question marks out there that to be considered is DOT is trying to sell it. If they sell it to a warehouse is not restricted, I don't think there. There's things that could go there that you just got to ask yourself, is that the appropriate spot for it? And then number two, if all this kind of came to fruition, we could definitely probably subject it somehow to the rezone in future date, but It's just something that has come up more recently because it actually went on the auction block last 2 weeks ago, and it did not sell. And this is the second time.
Yeah. I mean, if completely personal perspective, but I mean, if you look at what's going on out there and the fact that John Day is selling homes, and he just is getting, I mean, they're just selling those things like hotcakes. It's just amazing to me.
He actually sold most of his lots to another developer.
Yeah. Well, then they're also, he's also working on phase two, and we went in there the other day, he's like, yeah, they have most of them sold. So it's like, there's obviously a market for that, and quite honestly, I'd rather see houses go up there than a warehouse.
Well, the market conversation is valid, and the reality of how that works in my head is we've got a chunk of land that's for sale with a certain zoning that gives it a certain value. That value's inching its way down to the point where the residential says, oh, let me take it.
Yeah.
And that's how it would happen.
Yeah.
I don't think it's our place to go playing games with it, in my head. I mean, it's for sale, great. That doesn't create an opportunity for us as a city to start playing around with zoning, I don't think.
No, the reason why if we wanted to residential there, you have to rezone it. Right now it's restricted. You cannot do a residential there.
That the barrier to make it residential.
So it's not because it's for sale. We've been looking at this as a rezone, a needed rezone for a long time.
So if a buyer came along for that land, and I appreciate what you said earlier about subject to rezone, it would be, is it correct to assume that a down zone is most often acceptable in the normal process of things when somebody has a high density?
Typically, no.
Which?
Typically, people do not like to have their properties down zoned.
Well, no, I'm saying about the process. So if I'm a buyer for this DOT land, which currently is industrial zone, and I have an intent to use it as residential, the risk for me as the buyer, when I want to down zone it, is somewhat limited because I want it down zone. So to your point of it takes a while, it's also, if the price is right, it's worth it, and the risk is somewhat limited.
But also, if you went to purchase, make an offer on a piece of property that was subject to a rezone and a comp plan change, knowing that a planning commission recommendation has to be approved and a council decision, there's a lot of unknowns there that most people wouldn't make an offer on.
So I guess I'll go ahead.
No, I'm just going to simply say yes. I think we should take it up.
I was going to say I'm more than willing to take it up because it keeps options open.
Yeah.
But I'll say now that I'm likely to, oppose it, short of a buyer coming forward looking for it, because I'm not looking to take higher use out of our potential development. It's just really tough. We've got extremely limited areas. That's part of why we fought so hard to hold on to our EP zones, because we just don't have a lot of potential development areas for commercial and industrial. So
even if you guys choose to take it up, doesn't mean you have to make a decision. If you choose to take it up and leave it as is until you're
told. That's what I said. Yeah. That's why I think that's the right thing to do. It keeps the options open. It allows for, should something develop, then I could see my mind changing.
So, and while it's in the docket process, arguably with us, information can come in.
Yeah.
And maybe our decision process is expedited because we know something that's things are changing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. So the next one you call our limited commercial overlay district. This was for that chiropractic office that wanted to go in on Park Street, and the HDR zone didn't allow it. So we created this overlay district because we weren't in the comp plan cycle, and they wanted to take immediate action. And during that process, we said, well, doesn't downtown commercial just make more sense? That allows those commercial uses. This is really a busy commercial-type street. And so this is now the process by which we can go back and make that amendment. So we could just get rid of this overlay zone and make it downtown commercial, clean up the map.
I think we should absolutely go forward with it on the docket. And the question that I'll have is there a difference between one side of the street and the other for the zoning? But
and actually, that could all be considered.
Yeah, right.
Because the other question is, you know, how much, you know, you don't want to eat up your multifamily parcels either.
That's what I'm exactly what I'm thinking about is we're really short there.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'll be thinking about when we take that up.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, the next one. These are two properties that are owned by the city. And this is not relating to any sort of development proposal that the city has in mind, but it's just to open up opportunities. So you can see 5 and 6 on the map there are two little vacant parcels, one next to the Thai restaurant and the other on the corner of Bendigo and Park. Both of them vacant. They could be used for parking in the future. The city at some point may choose to develop them or to sell them. So if the city were to sell them, they could only be used for the uses within the parks zone, which is pretty limited.
Well, wouldn't that once again, though, then trigger the ability if the city chooses to declare them surplus property and for sale? Wouldn't you then have the ability to go and look at the zoning and change the zoning? You would sell them subject to.
It's again back to the comp plan amendment process. Mm-hmm. So this is a comp plan land use designation.
It ties your hand on timing, and then it also ties your hand a little bit on whether just because the city wants to, it doesn't mean the city council will approve it.
But to me, this is tipping the hand the other way. It's really saying, hey, we're rezoning this because we're going to move towards getting rid of them. And I don't know if either one or both of those are parcels that we should be getting rid of, particularly the downtown one when we are so short on parking.
Mm-hmm.
And I've raised more than once why we haven't paved that lot for $20,000.
Yeah. So that would still be fully optional as a proposal.
I understand it's an option. I also understand the way that it reads when it says it's now a commercial developable piece of property. Mm-hmm. So I think we should take it up. I'm going to object to changing it.
What use could the city use that zone? What function?
Under the current zoning?
No, under the
downtown commercial zone?
Yeah.
So downtown commercial allows residential commercial very, very broad.
But I'm saying under what would the city be able to use that for?
Under parks and open space.
Your question is, if we leave it parks and open space, what is the allowed uses?
Nope.
Okay.
If the change is made,
It
becomes...
If it's downtown commercial, it's...
What would the city do with the downtown commercial lot?
We may develop it as a parking lot, but we may also decide a building is appropriate there and we'll accommodate some parking and do other things with it. So that it's just opening up options.
Yeah.
There's the two lots are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost can't... The lot on the corner of Park and Bendigo is one of your most highly visible, highly, you know, the traffic counts in front of that are probably your bets.
The chamber had a kiosk there, right?
Well, no, we have Bartels, and then...
Yeah, no, he's...
Yeah, okay.
Long ago and far away.
It was obviously a great spot, because that was where the chamber chose to put its information center.
So that site, we would, you know... probably see as it would be probably better for the city to throw that back into the retail commercial inventory and actually allow it to help sustain some of our needs financially. The other lot that Rob's talking about is definitely a key lot, and we hear that from all the Birches, that whole building, the Thai, Pioneer, as you know, that area of town feels that's essential for parking. There's others been that have had an interest in selling it to developers similar to the corner of Park, what we just talked about. One thing that I think no matter what happens is there needs to be that discussion just with those businesses that rely on that parking as to what the true So I would say if you chose to move forward on this, I think that's all part of it, and maybe that there is even something you can add in that requires that public process on if it changes from a parking lot, because there is a need there, or at least the need is that those businesses feel that plays a big role to them. So
So our objective tonight was to go through these and say take them on or not take them on. Right. Right.
So not make any decisions.
We're definitely our opening salvos.
Yeah, we're here to about it. I get caught up in the thought process.
Actually, you guys, this is exactly how Mike and I, or Jamie.
Yeah.
As we discuss each one, it's they're all very interesting topics.
Yeah.
Each one of them's got pros and cons.
Did we answer seven?
Seven we talked about, right?
You take it on?
Yeah, seven's just basically a cleanup.
I'm not convinced we should do it, but I think we're talking. I think we're going to make sure Ron comes back to test it.
Yeah, I think Ron should be required to be here for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how did they get construction permits without having the proper...
I actually think the zoning happened after Public Works, but...
Really?
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Funny.
I think it's actually maybe just a map error that got solidified or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Nine.
So, or eight, first anyway. That's the same issue as the other two properties we're talking about in the downtown commercial area. So we're just, the post office has no plans that we know of to change, but should they ever change, or should some other retail use open up within a part of the post office, this would allow that to happen. The little red piece, no, that's a separate parcel. That's
Is that the lot on the other side of the post office drive?
That was going to be the car wash for a while.
Yeah. Okay.
So
this is just the post office.
I'm curious if our definition is public open space, how does a post office
POSPS stands for Parks, Open Space, and Public Facilities. So post offices, city halls, various other things like that are still allowed within the POSPS.
Exactly right. So therefore, parcels 6 in particular, docket 6, if the city had any intention to develop it on its own, they could do that and they don't need a zoning change. So
not develop it for retail use.
Understood, but for public use, if the city had intent for development for public use, they don't need any change in zoning. So it's purely if they're looking to sell it.
Potentially, I mean, it would have to fall into if it's going to be a city hall, that would probably fall into that parks and open space zone. If it was going to be
public parking,
could be allowed under both of those zones.
And in the end, you're
just saying, as you just defined, that zoning allows for a public building. Public use building. So we don't really need to change it if the city's intent was to potentially develop the lot.
We were public potentially use. Going to develop either one of those lots.
Right.
The post office lot's much bigger for us.
Just being clear.
Yeah. The only thing to add to this is we have DC zone as the zone. But as we look at this, I think it would be logical to also look at does the high density or the DC make sense? We want to keep our DC tight and dense from a commercial retail standpoint. Because that's always going to be a vehicular destination site for if it went to a commercial. I think the post office is there for years. But.
There's three votes for the new city hall location. Get back with the mayor on that.
I see city hall in the second story. City owns the building and leases it to the post office.
Exactly. Hey, make some money.
Isn't the post office privately owned building leased by the post office? How long possibly.
Oh, I don't know if it's privately owned.
No. Typically, that's what the post office does, is it's privately owned and then leased to the government.
Mm-hmm.
So it, depending on when, I've seen a lot of them where the leases run out and they've decided they didn't want a bigger space or a newer building. And they move to
it. They pick it up. Oh, I've seen the other
company. Well, with what the post office as a whole is doing for consolidation, that's the biggest threat, is that they're going to eliminate it altogether.
Yeah.
It's only a holding spot as it is. They don't. Yeah. I was shocked when I found out a few years ago they didn't process it anymore.
If it does, it did go that
straight to something.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't make sense as the parks. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, it seems like what happened was at some point, any city parcel or publicly owned parcel just got assigned a green color. Mm. And then somehow it morphed into this zone. But it, because there's things that really, like the two lots we're talking about, really wouldn't have made sense as public facility lots. So I don't think they envisioned building a annex city hall there, you know. So there are, you know, that just seems like how it happened. Now we're just trying to clean up some of that and address some of the issues that need to be addressed in doing
so. So the other green piece of it is the trail.
And that would remain green.
Yeah, okay.
We're going to sell that.
So it'd be a red and a pink.
Yeah. We'll
sell that trail. We don't need a bloody trail. Toll it. Just toll it.
Toll it.
That's all right, are we up to 9 now?
Did we decide that we're going to talk about 8? We're going to talk about 8.
I'm in favor.
Number 9.
So 9, Rob will be familiar with this one. So it's typical in design standards and other various standards relating to a site layout or design of a building to have some sort of process by which you can say strict application of this standard can be deviated from as long as the developer demonstrates through some kind of process that they're still meeting the intent of the standards. So very strict application can mean that you get a development that doesn't necessarily get to what you're trying to achieve.
But the intent is achieved. So
that makes sense.
Well, this is for design review. So design, let's come up with a good example.
So maybe the standard calls for 75% of a lot to be built out against the street. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't go there.
I'll go to Snoqualmie Ridge. We had this on Snoqualmie Ridge. And what it allowed was, anytime you write design standards, you're writing a very specific standard that's supposed to somehow work for every single type of use that could potentially go on that lot, and that's almost impossible. So you try to restrict the bottom of the barrel so you get high standards, but allow enough flexibility, and that's a hard line to hit. So often what we find is somebody has come in with a great idea, and it meets the intent, but when you look at, like, the overall percentage, and especially it deals with when you have specific numbers associated with things, like how much glazing, you know, has to be on the storefront. Somebody might come in with a really good design that doesn't have 50% glazing and it actually only has 35, but the reason is because they have this awesome recessed doorway because of that they had to, the structure had to be supported or something. Mm-hmm. And then, so we often sit there and scratch our heads and go, well, the intent meets it because it's creating this awesome pedestrian feature on the street, but yet the actual number doesn't. So then, with the only avenue is this big extensive variance process, which often doesn't make sense because it only applies to people that they have kind of a unique scenario, which this would not. Anybody can build it. So we kind of need a easier process.
Has this come up this year?
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
In the submittals that you've been working through? Where you've hit barriers, like Bartel submittals, for instance, where they've had features that were, again, going to hit intent, but they can't meet specific.
Well, Bartels, for example, in the downtown zone, we try, we require, is it 100% or 75% for this, the
glazing?
No, to be built to the building to be built to the street.
To the, I think it was
75. So on Bartels, what you have is you have this as part, and then the railroad or the trail.
The trail itself.
Okay, so anyway, you have what they have is a very long rectangular site. So once you put a building on here, you can't park behind it. So that means the building has to allow parking to the side just based on the nature of the parcel. And to do that, they can't do 75%, or if they did, their building would be so ridiculously shaped, it doesn't make sense. So, then the question is, you can start meeting this standard by playing games by putting a lot line here, and then all of a sudden they meet that, and then they have a shared parking agreement with the lot mm-hmm. next to them. But those are games that don't need to be played if we can just say, you know, the intent is made, so, or the intent has been met, and so we agree you've met the code, even though the strict 75% has not. So that's an example.
So I look at this and I say, so what's the root cause here, and what are we trying to fix? So rather than create a deviation process, fix that. Fix that to make it be.
But you can never anticipate every extension.
What do you mean by fix that?
Fix the requirement.
But the requirement's a good requirement on a main street. The reason this is a difficult one is because of the shape of the lot. If you were developing from, say, Jacqueline's just
no,
decided.
I mean, I get that. Yeah. What I'm saying is that rather than have exceptions to deal with odd shapes rather than
that's what we're deviation process. No, that's what. But to come up with a process to deal with odd shapes, we need to develop a deviation process.
I think let me try it this way. Versus trying to come up with the list of exceptions that would apply to that particular piece of the code, what we're saying is that you need an exception process that whatever that unique thing mm-hmm. that you didn't anticipate comes along, you have a way to deal with it within your rules versus saying,
we don't have any way of someone to come to us and say, well, what about this instead?
Well, we have a variance process, but the variance process is a very, it often is not going to relate to design, because the nature of variances is you're only granted a variance if you have a hardship that nobody else experiences. When you're building a building, you got a blank canvas, so it's more of a...
So how much more work does it put on city staff to have potentially than a bunch of people who come forward and want to go through this deviation process?
Well, we'd set up some pretty clear criteria that they would have to demonstrate that they're meeting in order to grant the deviation. So I don't imagine it would be too much.
No. It would actually potentially help us because right now what we do is when we find something that really makes sense that our code doesn't allow, mm-hmm. the developers just don't go, okay. Well, I'll just build something that doesn't quite work as, you know. So then we get into this kind of impasse on, you know, we can't just say, well, okay, we won't worry with, you know. So what we're trying to do is create, and like Mike said, this is something we would like to take up because we think we can come to put forth some criteria that actually help the developer, help the city. Through the process.
As a separate example, we already have a deviation process in our landscape code. So we have a section that says when it meets, you know, environmental objectives or better accommodates the shape and size of the lot or a bunch of other things, then you can deviate from the other standards in this chapter. So we're just trying to also say, let's deal with this with our design chapter as well, so we're not stuck to having so many windows per area facade or whatever the standard might be.
I say we take it up.
I say yes. I think it's an easier process to get things done.
Yeah, it's just finding the right balance.
It's going to take some, yeah, some
it's
discussion.
It's not going to be an easy one. I don't think any of the first one.
So I guess we just want
Is that 10?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have one transportation bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is just a very simple code cleanup. Where?
First thing on the agenda.
Yep.
I say for January.
Oh,
really?
Oh, this one you mean?
This is a simple one. We're working around this. This is just, it's not consistent with how we do all the others.
So I have just one to add to this, and this was something that came up recently. It's a very simple one. Our capital facilities element of our comprehensive plan adopts, or it currently says that the council should consider adopting the school district's capital facilities plan by reference in this chapter. And that's because to collect impact fees on behalf of the school district, the Growth Management Act requires that we actually adopt the city's or the school district's capital facilities plan. So we just need to change that language from consider adopting to adopts by reference, and then give some out if the council disagrees with that particular year's CFP. So it's a basic cleanup item.
Fine way to think it up. It sounds really weird.
Why would you do that?
Are we missing one other thing? Storm drain comp plan?
The storm drain comp plan?
The one Ron's talking about?
Carrying over. Is that what
is that
the question
be
the stormwater
next year?
Comp
yeah.
plan? I don't know if that would be in the purview of the Planning Commission.
Oh, it's not. Sorry.
Ron's working on it. It's not in.
That's okay. I'm not asking.
He said it's coming back to us.
Yeah it's coming. It is coming back to you guys. I'm just. I'm trying to recall the process. Is the storm? I don't think it's part of our. It must be. If it does need to go back through at the actual docket process, would you guys mind taking it up next year?
Would we mind? Well, I don't know.
I guess I wasn't looking at it for here, because to me it was just a continuation. It's already open and we're working on it.
Yeah, it's just like our transportation. We can open it.
We're just continuing.
Thank you,
right?
Yeah.
I'm much more curious about why we slid the sign regulations to the footnote.
We really don't want to talk
about this. For a year you've been saying, hey, we need to deal with signage. Yes. And now suddenly it went to the bottom.
It's not that we're trying to marginalize it or sweep it under the carpet. It's just a big one. And it'll take a lot of time. So
we're just not certain we can actually... with our schedule. Well, I don't know. Mike and I have been pondering this one and when the proper time to start this is. It will take a long time to get potentially, but we also have a lot of work we want to do on it because we have a lot of, I think, good suggestions that I think by the time we probably have 4 months, of work to do just putting together a really good section for you guys to even start considering. So I guess realistically, we're just not sure if that's next year, unless you guys,
So I feel like since it came up and it created such jibber-jabber in the community for one occasion, that if you look at, some of the other things, it's like, to me, it's just as important, and we have examples of where it created pain for some people, so we should talk about it instead of keep pushing it off.
And I guess from the other perspective, while I know the amount of work that goes on and staff to be ready to bring these kind of items forward and all that is extensive, from the Planning Commission's perspective, to me, a lot of these zoning issues are going to be fairly straightforward. I don't see them taking enormous amounts of time, so it feels fairly light.
It's just that
for a year long.
Your decision can be light, but there's a lot of process that has to go into each one of those with the public hearing, preparing the staff report, and taking it to council.
And we also have, we have council that I think there's some that potentially might not find that to be our top priorities. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to balance, I have a retreat. This retreat is scheduled for early January sometime. And we're going to hear a little bit from the council on what the priorities are. So based on that, we put it on here because we see it as important. We want to bring it forward. We just are not right now trying to balance all that.
Well, so. I guess I think it should be on our work plan because I've heard it over and over for the last year that it's a problem. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear about any really of these other zoning issues as problems necessarily. Of course, that's part of what this is about. So for something we've heard about so much, it seems like it ought to be in the work plan.
Things that get the public attention should be in the plan. That make it to the newspaper. And those are things we should definitely talk about.
I can certainly say I'm not looking forward
no,
to it.
No, I mean, I think when it came up, it was like, ugly. Oh, no, it's going to be really hard.
Well, now.
Screaming and yelling.
The irony about the part that came, you're talking about the nails issue?
I'm talking about signage in general.
Signs.
What else came up that was?
The nursery.
Yeah, the nails issue.
Oh, yeah.
Those are off-premise signs. I mean,
there is no easy answer to that.
That's totally a lot of.
But the fact is that it created a lot of conversation and.
Right, but sometimes it's more of an education. But sometimes it's an education of the law, of the regulations that everybody's abiding by, and enforcing it equitably to everybody, versus going and just changing things. So, I wouldn't suggest us change the sign code because of that issue at all, because that's the most minor part of what we're worried about.
Needs to be.
Is this on behalf of anybody in particular that it would be on our agenda?
No.
Because I would support doing item one that's a citizen-requested item versus one that's just a news article. So for that, I would say no, that we don't discuss it.
The reason why the sign is on there is because, we're looking at all the time at how we can improve our code. So we have a number of things we're looking at that we'd like to do.
The other
and
thing
one is one of them.
This is the sign code is not a part of the comp plan amendment, so we're not limited to the 1 year schedule. If we decide after we've dealt with some of these comp plan things that we got some time, the schedule looks pretty open, let's take this up now. We can take it up at any time.
I get that. It just seems we're at the time when we're talking about what's our agenda for the coming year. And yes, these are the docketed items. But we're saying yes, these are going to be dealt with. So I understand that. I just don't want to slip, and that's what I'm saying. If it's formally on our work plan, we're more likely to deal with it.
Well, I'm totally on the same page, and I think that what we need to do is kind of have that retreat, figure out what the work plan is, and then our plan is in early January, probably more like it would definitely be after the retreat, so it might be your first meeting in February is bring forth the kind of envisioned schedule for you guys and topics and based on their input too. So, we hear you.
So what did we decide about number one, by the way?
Before we go back, is there any interest to the other item we have here with amendments to see the threshold?
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
You should wait until it's adopted.
Yeah, that's the primary reason it's not a docket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I'm going to track that one at this point.
Okay, and we're back to number one. What's your pleasure?
Yes.
I don't know, I guess for me, I get what he's trying to accomplish, but I feel like if it was for his situation, that it's an easy conversation to have, but because it's more than just that, so we need to I just think we're getting some really sticky mud.
I think because we're talking about docket number one, correct?
Yeah.
I think because he's got the alternative of going through the permit process to adopt his change. We're not telling him no. We're simply saying it's not appropriate for the docket process because we have to consider the particular docket number four and probably some other things that tie to that that we're not thinking about and kind of an overview perspective rather than what just what he's proposing. That would be my rationale for saying, you know, defer it.
And I guess from my standpoint, from what I've heard, and I know the way that I'm feeling about wanting to look at the area more comprehensively and knowing the kind of staff time that it's going to drive for something that we're feeling is not ripe, that I'm inclined to just pass as well. So do we need a vote? I'm hearing you're saying pass. Mm-hmm. You're saying pass. I pass.
Did you have any points out? I would pass as well.
I say it's up for discussion.
Okay. I move we move docket number item number one to a future date.
Second.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Extensions? None. So we'll not take up. Okay. Good job. I've got kind of a comprehensive question about or request to staff for the comprehensive plan discussions is that it seems like, particularly when we're leading off with so many rezone questions, that as we kick off the year, it would be great to start with kind of that overview, whether we do that in, whether it takes a whole session or whether it's a part of one of our meetings, that kind of just sets the groundwork of here's what the zoning's about, here's where it derives from, here's how the comprehensive plan meets code, right?
Mm-hmm.
That overview of here's what we're trying to accomplish, right? Just kind of set the stage, the groundwork for kind of the whole basis of what we're going after. I think that helps us in a refresher and a grounding in as we go through the individual items so we don't get lost in the weeds.
Hmm.
Other questions, comments, items for the night?
Did we get resolve on what to do with all these docket items? Because there was talk about four as well.
Four.
Were there others that we were not going to discuss?
I don't think there's anything else on the list that we were going to discuss.
Yeah.
Just
so passed on one, we accepted all the others for discussion.
So all other docket items shall be discussed within the next, is it 12 months? What's our timeline?
Yeah.
That's my motion.
Good motion.
Oh, I'll second that motion then.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Motion to adjourn.
Second. Motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Second was ahead of the motion.
Most people wait for a motion before they second it. You know.
So if are we going to see these dockets again?